On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
He really is a master trainer of stayers, and even the way he wants to adjust the programming of racing in Victoria to reflect a better platform into the spring.
Lakeside has always been a track that plays towards horses that sit on the speed, but with that wind, the southwesterly that blew up, it was still made it near impossible for horses to run on.
A lot of people quoted as saying, let's make it the greatest weekend ever, have the derby and the grand final. I don't like that because I know how much oxygen that's going to take out of racing.
Of all the horses in Australia right now, which one has the most ability and the most scope? It's Russian Cadillac.
All the conversation beforehand was going well, super, flying, in great form. As somebody on the outside, remember, most punters were dealing with information from 2 weeks ago when we were having a bet. You've got to be guided by that.
World of the triple place parlay there's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
Welcome to a special edition of The Verdict live from the Emerald. We are here thanks to Oz Equipment Rentals, and it is great to get an extended edition of The Verdict panel, because as soon as we said we're back at the Emerald, everyone just down tools and ran here as quick as they could, including Matty Stewart, who is not too unfamiliar with being in a pub at 9:05 in the morning, but you're actually in very good form. How are you, Matty?
Good, Mickey. How are you? This fits into the what could possibly go wrong over the next 4 hours category. I dare you to... Well, should we get feeding? We run the risk of the sacking from our employer, but let's get the schooners out.
Well, we've got to wait for
the coffees?
The hairy one, Kieran Maher, to unload.
Sip them and see if they're really coffee.
Mytho is here as well. Mytho, good to see you.
G'day, Mickey. Yeah, no, I can't believe it. It's lattes all round. I came to the Emerald. Where's Andy Lewis? And why isn't he behind the bar pouring a schooner for us?
When I walked in, he had a power hose out the front hosing off the leaves. I said, mate, don't deter people coming in. You've got a power hose at the entry gate.
Feel like you're in Minnesota.
Oh, God. We won't go anywhere near the US at the moment. Hey, you would have had a few big celebrations here, though, over the years, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there's been a few. Yeah, we've Moods and I have shared a schooner off the wood a few times here, and it's an institution, isn't it, to Melbourne Racing. All roads lead to the Emerald after a big day at the races. I can see Shark licking his lips. I'm so glad that Kieran Maher has availed himself of the show, because I think he has been the star performer over the past certainly 5 years and maybe beyond that.
With Colin McKenna in the wings,
Hall of Fame stuff.
So I've got a little family connection. Andy's niece goes out with my nephew, and they're happily ensconced. So I might become part of Melbourne Hotel family royalty at some point.
Gee, the
through marriage.
Know how to play the game.
Very
properly,
strategic
don't they?
Sort of coupling, isn't there? Yeah.
Just a pack land of chess pieces, your family, aren't you?
But it's quite
like
funny.
Game of Thrones, really.
It's quite funny because young Joffa, my nephew, he likes his racing, comes along when he can get a free ticket or two.
Joffa
comes back here quite regularly, and he has texted me on the odd occasion going, what's the name of your curly haired mate who's in racing? And I, are you at the Emerald? That'd be Kieran Maher. Yeah, he just bought me a beer. He's not a bad bloke. He's had a few, though.
He stays better than his grand annual winners, Kieran Maher. Mick Sharkey, good to see you here, mate.
Gentlemen.
Gee, we're going to talk about the weekend's racing. Huge amount of interest, not just here but overseas. I'm keen to get your thoughts on that Japanese derby yesterday, which was just spectacular. But the big news that's been breaking this morning, and Matt, you've got a copy of this leaked document of the proposed spring carnival. Mytho, you've had a bit of a look at it. Sharky, you've had a bit of a look at it. We're going to try and distill it for the listeners and the participants out there in regards to what it actually does mean. And it is up on the RSN website as well. Mytho, to you, first of all, now that you've had a bit of a look at this, are you happy with what the proposed plan is? And as an owner of a horse who would be targeting a Caulfield Cup in Mr. Quickie, is it a program that works?
Yeah, there's a lot to digest. So you're really shooting from the hip here. And I think I maintain my curious wonder at why we can't ask the VRC to change. And everyone seems to be singing from that hymn book. Everyone seems to be saying, if everything moves back, we can have a carnival that has worked for decades and decades and been the envy of the world over the course of that sort of 8 to 10 week period. I think it's time for some really strong leadership and maybe a sledgehammer approach to say to the VRC, here are your dates, take them or leave them. Because that's what the Racing Victoria mandate is. They control the calendar. So give them their dates and say, run whatever races you want on those dates, but here are your dates. And the obvious would be this, this and this to us. But hey, who are we to run your club? We just run the calendar.
It's interesting that you bring that point up, because in this working document, which has been distributed to the different industry parties, it does say that the review group have a number of options, and they include retaining traditional dates, moving the Spring Carnival back 4 weeks, the Cox Plate Carnival, the Caulfield Cup Carnival and the Melbourne Cup stay as is in their area, or the Caulfield Cup Carnival moves after the Melbourne Cup Carnival with the Cox Plate. And it said that the VRC and the Moonee Valley Race Club ultimately advised that their preference was to retain their traditional spring racing carnival dates through October and early November, meaning option three was not supported or progressed. So it was the Moonee Valley Racing Club and the VRC who said, no, we want to stay in our traditional dates.
So four options became two very quickly. Mm. So, and the only two options that were left on the table were...
Stay as is?
Not really.
Or move.
I know what you're saying.
There's a veto because the calendar is run by Racing Victoria.
Yeah, well, that's it, exactly.
And right now, we need strong leadership like we've seen in other sports where, it's a bit of a poo sandwich for some people, but it's not for others, and we've just got to wear that. We've got to accept the fact that this is an environment like no other. We are trying to survive and do the very best thing by our participants and our customers. And if our customers can go, if more customers can go in late November, early December, to Flemington Racecourse, that's what should be number one.
And, Shark,
and we don't know what that looks like, Matty, sorry.
Isn't that the other curveball here? And I agree with everything that Mitho has said. And I still think because of the rapid movement with the confidence that crowds can return to major sporting events, and the story seems to be changing in a positive way almost daily, the scenario that might be a very, very difficult one for the VRC may well be that within the next week or so, we may have a very strong clue that you might get crowds at this side of the Melbourne Cup, but not this side. And I keep harping on about this, but say if, loosely speaking, crowds are allowed to return to a large degree to major sporting events from the 15th of November. What does that do with the VRC's position then? They have to change.
They have to.
Is it too late because this has already been determined? How does that work out then?
1st of December, Matty. You know, start of summer. Yeah. We're back to normal crowds allowed to attend. The VRC could be sitting pretty saying, oh, you're guilty. 1st Tuesday in December, we've got 100,000 at Flemington.
But it would actually be reckless of the VRC in that particular situation if they said, no, we're by hell or high water, we're not changing. But if they were told if you do change on this one off, you will get crowds from the 15th of November onwards. I would be stunned if the VRC didn't say, okay, that's it, we have to move.
Lock in. Yeah.
What is the basis of their argument not to move? Is it simply, oh, it's tradition, 1st Tuesday in November, we own that spot? Is that what it is?
Well, I spoke to Lee Jordan at length I asked him that very question a couple of weeks ago. What are the major... History is one, relationships is another, corporate arrangements, lots of stuff. But I'm not convinced that those relationships that they talk about can't be transplanted and still be effective a month later.
But the corporate world hasn't been absolved of what is going on in the world so far in 2020. Surely they're not sitting around their sponsors and everything else going, oh, gee, I'm glad VRC is still going on in the first week of November, despite the fact that we've nearly lost our business and everything else that's gone on in the world. Like, you've got to move and be agile.
But isn't it time? Isn't the clock ticking the biggest factor here? Like, all the things we're talking about, decisions have to be made for programming.
This horse is back in work now.
Well, that's right. But so how do you then say to the VRC, if this decision is all made in the next week or so because of time, how then do you reverse the clock if there's a major crowd announcement 2 or 3 weeks down the track?
It sounded to me like it was a TV broadcast situation that Channel 10...
What does Channel 10 care if it's on now or another time?
Well, let's suppose that they do. I would have thought that, look, VRC, Flemington, you went rogue and went your own way against what was probably best for the racing industry, and went with an outlier in terms of your broadcaster. We've got no concern about that. From a Racing Victoria point of view, yeah, we'll try and accommodate you because we don't want it to be a total disaster for you, but that's not going to be a deciding factor in whether or not we move your carnival. I can't believe that.
Well, I haven't asked Channel 10. I've worked for them, obviously, but I haven't spoken to them in regards to that. But I would find it difficult to think that Channel 10 would have any issues with moving it back because they don't have other sport which it would clash.
Exactly. I picked that up from your interview with Giles Thompson last week. He specifically mentioned commercial arrangements.
Well, I would say that would be more TV Channel 7 because Channel 7 would be wanting to get, with the football and stuff.
No,
like
that was in regards to VRC. So
the commercial agreements
need to hear from Channel 10.
Yeah. The commercial agreements, I would imagine, would be what Matt is more saying, as in sponsorship. But also, they also want to sell their media rights, not just from the television aspect, but their online aspect with World Horse Racing. So maybe there are other parts of that which they don't want to move into different international racing areas. But look, I have not asked the question. It's an easy question to ask, but I would find it, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the number one thing is that they want to run the cup on the first Tuesday in November.
And I don't think you can completely trash that either. I think you, 150 years just to change, the whole national sporting calendar and the racing calendar within that is all, it's taken 150 years to evolve into the model that we have where everyone gets their little time in the sun. If racing suddenly goes bang, we're moving back a month, what does it do to the ripple effect with other sports and the calendar? What does it do
then? I'll ask you an interesting question, which someone mentioned to me over the weekend, was what about us who are in the bubble, but if we think about those outside the bubble? Most people think once the Melbourne Cup is run and done, racing's done.
Correct.
And that's very
important. Could there be people that just tune off and don't even consider the Caulfield Cup?
That's a big fear. No doubt about that.
And that is a really big problem that Racing Victoria need to address. If they're going to put the Melbourne Cup Carnival on for our once-a-yearers, And then have basically the majority of the carnival still to come, I mean, we are just flushing down the toilet millions and millions of dollars and eyeballs across our sport.
Well, this proposal for the MRC does attempt to plug the hole between the Melbourne Cup and the Caulfield Cup, if the Caulfield Cup... So there's 4 weeks that could be a desert. They have, for instance, the Toorak Handicap, 14th of November. So they're trying to, continue the narrative.
Let's have a look at some of it, because we have got the proposal in full here, and if we start from the top, which is interesting, and you talk about trainers and owners needing to get some quick, information and clarity on this. We spoke to Adam Trinder on Saturday, and he spoke about Mystic Journey. He's getting her ready to run in the Bletchingley Stakes to target her at the Menzies. Well, the Menzies no longer going to be on Saturday, 29th of August. According to this plan, the PB Lawrence will be run on that day, and the Memsie.
It's a comparable race.
The Memsie, but one's a Group 2, one's a Group 1. The Memsie will
still
move.
Still 1,400 metres weight for age.
Yeah, but one's a Group 1, one's a Group 2. And he's thinking about the broodmare possibility. The Memsie then moves back to. Where is it here? The Memsie moves back to Caulfield Cup Day, I think it is. So
in the case of her, I don't think her value goes up or down now.
No, but this is what what trainers need to know. Like, he's got her ready to go for this early point. So, I mean, that's just the first one. No change for the fee and stakes, no change for Maccabi Diva Stakes on the 12th of September. What this will have is 12 consecutive Saturdays of Route 1 races.
Yeah.
Now, the Underwood will move to Saturday the 19th of September instead of the Rupert Clark meeting. The Moya meeting on the Friday night would then move back to the Saturday, which would normally be the grand final day. And then the Underwood Stakes meeting, which was on the Sunday the 29th, would no longer be there. Turnbull Stakes Day, Saturday 3rd of October, would become the Caulfield Stakes meeting. Turnbull would move back 1 week to what would have been the Caulfield Guineas meeting.
It still comes down to time. There's such a riddle involved here. I know, but that's why, even if this is theoretically a good idea, which it may be theoretically a good idea, along the lines of what Danny O'Brien's talking about, summer, start and finish, it just seems like there's too much to do and too many people to convince, too many people to liaise with in a matter of days.
So what's the alternative then?
Just move it back a month.
Clubs don't want it moved back a month, and Racing Victoria doesn't seem inclined to say, listen,
they have to go
to the boss, you're all moving back a month.
I don't think West Coast and Freo wanted to be in a hub at the Gold Coast either. But we've got to do things that make us uncomfortable at this time in what's best for the industry.
What signs are you seeing that Racing Victoria will suddenly say, well, we're in charge now and you're all moving it back a month. Well, are you seeing any signs that say...
Well, that's what I'm calling for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I think the whole industry is crying out for.
But is a bit of top-end
we're
leadership.
We're not seeing a turnaround.
If you're
going
to make dramatic change that the ripple effect sort of has effects on other sports and racing interstate, everything, consultation, is it broken enough or broken at all enough to warrant such a dramatic change?
That's a very good question. And I think that... We either leave it as it is and just...
Isn't it a global success, a historic, magnificent global success, the Melbourne Spring Carnival?
Well, and there is no guarantees that anything will be better by moving it back a month. Mm. That's probably the other thing that the VRC is saying. And maybe they're holding the gun to the head to say, listen, Race in Victoria, just leave it as it is. Just let's continue. All the horses have started preparations for a carnival that looks the same as last year. Let's just play on that way. So I'm with you. I don't want to see this mumble jumble and we're trying to, you know, squeeze in race meetings and swap around and make sure there's sort of half programs for horses to get to. Either leave it as it is or push it all back a month.
Isn't the VRC's position entitled to be... Over 150 years, we've proven ourselves to be one of the greatest institutions in the world, sporting institutions like Royal Ascot and Wimbledon. Sure, there might be ideal world scenarios where if you turn back the clock, you would make changes. But aren't we a gargantuan success? So why would you alter a gargantuan success?
And that's a great point. And yes, they are entitled to have that view.
And no, but the wider Spring Carnival as well, year, it is also a gargantuan success.
In this particular year and the gargantuan... non-success of this year, for lack of a word. I can't use that radio.
I'm proud that we've used the word gargantuan four times in three times.
Yeah, we've smashed it here.
We have smashed gargantuan.
Yes, they're entitled to have that view, but surely, given what's transpired this year globally, there needs to be some sort of agility there to say, okay, well, for 1 year, we can bend.
I think the VRC fears that if you dip your toe in the water, you don't take it out, and that the pressure will be to change it for good.
Just to wrap up the back end of the spring, for those who are interested into what it would look like. So the Caulfield Cup meeting, which was traditionally on the 17th of October, becomes the Rupert Clark meeting. The Cox Plate, no change. Melbourne Cup week, no change. The Zipping Classic meeting becomes the Turek Handicap meeting. Ballarat Cup Day becomes the Caulfield Guineas meeting, and then the following Saturday, 28th of November, becomes the Caulfield Cup. Now, the Ballarat Cup moves back to the 5th of December. They found nowhere as yet for the Pakenham Cup meeting, and the Zipping Classic will move forward to, I think it's either the Guineas Day traditionally, and that means that there are reductions in some distances. It's a plethora matrix of what the Spring Carnival will look like, but they are the highlights.
What about those Caulfield lead-ups to Derby and Oaks, the Norman Robinson and the, whatever it's called, the fillies, the Ethereal, is it? Do those races stay in the program to give horses an opportunity to get to a 2,500-metre trip of an Oaks and a Derby? Because if not, those races could very well become the target races for those three-year-olds at the back end of November, 2,000 metres.
And therefore you diminish the VRC's product,
correct.
Why not cut the distances? We're moving Caulfield Cups to late November or whatever it is. Why not make a Derby 2,000 metres this year and an Oaks at 2,000 metres?
Have you not been listening for the last 20 years at the resistance the VRC has shown
but
to that?
It's nonsensical. Yeah, but look at the horses that run in those races year in, year out. The bulk of them...
We all know this,
they
Mick,
don't turn up anywhere else ever again.
Common sense ain't that common, particularly when it comes to race clubs.
Well, I can tell you, under these proposals, they remain on their traditional days at the traditional distance, those lead-up races and the Oaks. And
on their traditional days, so they will be lead-ups into...
Correct, because they're heading towards Flemington for the Oaks and the Derby.
But
isn't the greatness of the
VRC Carnival that when you debate elements of it, like the Oaks distance and the Derby distance, that it is such a passionate debate, that almost convinces me to keep it as it is because it is such a dramatic talking point that it means it's so significant in the minds of people that they want to debate, they want to tear each other's throats out to sort of debate it.
So part of my... real feeling about this, about pushing it back a month, is because I'm a VRC member and I want to go. And if that gives me a better chance, that tradition goes out the window, because it's my tradition to go as well.
Yeah.
And without members, the club has nothing. So if there's a better chance for members to go and participate, and participants to go along, and more of us,
And the war and the GA. The GA, to me, are the most important people.
That should be the number one overriding factor for any race club.
Totally.
Not your tradition. If we can't go, but there is a chance come the first week of December we can, that should be the decision.
Well, I think most race clubs are wanting that. And I think Flemington feel that they will be able to get a certain amount of people in there in that November slot.
If they can get more in a month later, they should do that.
Caulfield may be concerned about whether they can and want to push it back, because it's a very good point you raise. We're coming up to the end of the current racing season, the beginning of the new season, which is where members need to renew memberships.
Correct.
Now, that's where race clubs get a lot of their funding.
Yep.
Now, if you're a member right now, and you don't know, it's a bit like MCC members, AFL members, you don't know whether you're actually going to be able to get anything back for the money you spend. Are you more or less likely to renew your membership and give these clubs the funding that they need?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And there are options, I know there are at the MCC anyway, to suspend your membership for 12 months. Now, if there's a real pushback from the members to the VRC to say, hey, listen, we're not sure we're going to be able to go, and effectively, I pay my membership, so
they're not
cheap for
either.
4 days.
But that's another just a massive issue to be dealt with such a small time frame. And just to reiterate,
race club memberships aren't like football club memberships, where you say, "Well, okay, I'm in love with my club. I'm going to donate to help
them
out
because
they need it."
Yeah.
Just to reiterate, meeting today, 11 a.m. Trainers Association, Owners Association, maybe even with the big heavy hitters from the Owners Association, a few of the big trainers. They're all going to meet with key RV executives to discuss whether the two biggest stakeholder groups, the trainers and the owners, are supportive or not. If those groups say, we kind of half like it, but it's all too hard, and go thumbs down, I don't think this idea can progress beyond today.
But that's human nature, because people are reluctant to change or embrace change. And
I'm just saying the fact of it is.
Yeah, I know, but that's, if they all just say, oh, bugger it, it's too hard, thumbs down, I think you have to give this sort of plan a chance.
And you need more time to think about it.
We've only seen this from 8 o'clock this morning. So when you've got proper dates and the whole suite of races that are included on each of those proposed dates, and you can start to get an idea of, oh, that's how you'd get a horse from point A to point B, or that's how you'd prepare a derby prep, or that's how you get a horse to in this direction to head towards a Caulfield Cup. Remember, I think we need to let the actual detail just settle in a little bit and say, well, you know what? It works. It's weird and it's messy, but it works. You can get a horse to a Group 1 grand final
around the
and
room,
get a result.
I'll get Warren Huntley's view in a minute, because he's a very interested expert observer. Yes, would you do it? Should you do it? Can you do it, Mitho?
Push it back a month.
Yeah.
It's not on the table, Mitho. There's only two options. It's stay as is, or Caulfield Cup Carnival moves after. That's what the vote's on.
That's a no for me. Yep.
If the race programs around these races give you proper progression for trainers, because they're important in the conversation here as well, then you could do it. You could try it.
What do you reckon, Felgo?
Personally, I don't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing it occur. I don't think it will happen, though. I think it's going to be too difficult.
Okay.
Matt, what are you doing? Taking your microphone off.
Yeah, well, he was going to get Gareth Hall's
I thought he was going to storm out.
But he's listening to REM's greatest hits on his headphones. So. I thought he was engaged, but he's obviously not engaged.
What about you then, Matt?
I'm curious about the idea, and I don't necessarily get entrenched in tradition, but I just think the clock's ticking too hard and too loud, and there's too much of a myriad to think about. So I just think ultimately, too much to do in too little time can't happen.
Is Melbourne Racing Clubs, is their main motivation for
crowds?
Crowds, yeah, to get as many people back to the races as possible.
Interesting on that, though. I've just got sent a message, and it's a very good point this person makes, saying that the AFL is planning to only have 30% capacity for crowds throughout next year, because there's no vaccine. So the thought that we would go from maybe getting 5,000 to 10,000 people on course to 80,000 to 100,000 is totally fanciful. They don't think that they're going to get 100,000 at the grand final. They're basing maybe one-third, one-quarter of capacity, which is 20,000 to 30,000 people. So that
which
might,
is mid-October, isn't
that
it?
That might be the capacity that stays in place for 6 months. So putting it back 1 month may not make one iota difference to the amount of people you can actually get on a race.
Which is effectively, I mean, there is a strong example coming up in a couple of weeks, and that's Royal Ascot. that have said, we are just keeping our traditional dates, and whoever can turn up, racing will be back. As long as racing is back, we are running these races at Royal Ascot. In fact, they're adding races to the program, which is, you know, set to for us a million miles away. It's I can't wait for Royal Ascot in a couple of weeks, and the fact that it's in its traditional June spot, second week of June, here we go. So I think if we have some clarity. And the further away you are from running your big carnival, the more clarity we'll have from state governments and federal governments on what we can and can't do. So I can see why Melbourne Racing Club are doing what they're doing, but I can also see why the VRC are holding fast and almost asking Racing Victoria to pull the trigger. You pull the trigger, but we're not supporting this. It's a shame that we can't get some sort of unity in our own state, because we certainly don't have unity around the country because we're too busy fighting New South Wales.
Warren Huntley, one of the best form judges and a man who clocks all the good horses out of Flemington, joins us now as well.
Long time since I've been there, Michael.
Well, you know it left, right and centre, and the thoughts of a lot of trainers and how horses' preparations evolve. What's your gut feel? Are you for or against?
There's a lot to digest. My gut feeling would be I'm probably against. I mean, we do have no guarantees as to when crowds are going to get back in course. So by moving the Caulfield Cup Carnival, there's no guarantee that that will allow crowds or members to be on course. And don't forget the AFL is still a moving feast too. We've been
very
fortunate in the way that things have been managed so far. When we relax restrictions, people start moving around a bit more. That creates more of an opportunity, I suppose, for the virus to spread in another way. So what if we move the Caulfield Cup Carnival primarily to accommodate crowds and the AFL? The AFL moves, crowds aren't allowed back, and why have we moved it? I don't know. And I'm also a little bit vested interest that this is going to have a significant impact on my golf weekend in Port Douglas. So
nothing beats self-interest, we know that. What about the...
Just on the AFL, quickly, yeah, before we move on from that. There's been reports in the last 24 hours that the AFL fixture might be changed around to the point where the grand final's in November.
Because of the border controls over in WA and what
happens weeks and everything else. I'm looking at it right now on the Fox Sports website. Well, like it's ridiculous. We don't know. See, this is the thing. The AFL's still deciding. As Warren said, it's a moving feast. They're still yet to say this is the absolute date for grand final day.
Yeah, that's
what we're all running scared of.
But the advantage that the AFL have got is that they can switch on a whim. You can't suddenly say 2 weeks out from the Caulfield Cup, hey, everyone, they're going to hold off for 4 or 5 weeks. Just everyone call their jets, and that horse that you've got trained to the minute, just make it another 5 weeks and a minute. So the AFL do have the advantage that they can switch it, they can change on a coin. Whereas I think, you know, to be fair on racing officials, they need to give some surety, as we're calling for right now, as participants, owners, trainers,
exactly,
jockeys need. Yeah, what is it going to look like? What does the carnival look like so we can start prepping these horses?
We have to give that surety to the participants because they're the ones that are putting the game on. You can't run scared from the AFL all the time, be reactive to another sport.
You
have to plan for your own industry and your own sport.
Just a bit of context as well about the dramatic need from the MRC particularly to try and do something radical to earn income. I've just had a text from a former high-end racing administrator who didn't want to be named, but just to give his view on it, and this is an obvious one, I guess, but just something that we haven't necessarily nailed this morning, the dramatic need from Racing Victoria and the MRC to generate some income because of the 800 pokey machines in 10 weeks that the MRC has had redundant have cost it an absolute fortune. So they are in a scrounging mentality as far as what can we do. The status quo for them doesn't fill that hole. It does not. But maybe if they push back and they suddenly get crowds, they can somehow, by the end of December, look at a financial equation that is not as desperate as it is. Because the MRC does rely on a lot of off-course pokey pub income to sustain its business model. And they have been whacked more than any other club because of that attachment to clubs and pubs and pokies.
Well, I think all clubs are looking for funding, aren't they? And that's an example. The VRC earns all its funding through on-course activities and its media partnership deals. They don't have any extra outside revenue.
And their core business
and
only.
And that brings us back to what would this do for turnover? Adam Hamilton will be in here, because I think when it comes down to those who make the decisions, that will be the number one factor. Do they think this shift will increase turnover and revenue for the sport or not? Do you think it will, Mitha?
No, I don't. And that's because you're once a year, is particularly if we're not all aligned on this, and the VRC run their carnival a month before. Basically, we've got, you know, a month's worth of high-end racing that usually generates high and strong turnover. You know, those once a yearers pack up their bat and ball and head to their beach houses, don't they, Mick?
Yeah, there's a potential for that to happen. You have to, I guess, then rely on Racing Victoria and the clubs to promote and market that the show's not over and to make them aware of that. That's their job, after all. So you have to trust in them that they're going to make the right noise at the right time.
Good horses are the best promotion, and if they're spread across a mishmash of a carnival and horses targeting not your traditional, I'm going to run in this and this, it's sensing like it's going to get very messy unless there's unity on this.
The one argument that I'm a little bit tired of is, oh, it's going to bang into autumn, and what about the resting of our horses?
That, yeah.
Mate, the international trainers, they look at the races, and they look at their horses, they get them fit. This is what the races are and what they're worth. This whole idea of this traditional idea of paddock rest and all that.
Every trainer you talk to
them about the nightmare of sending horses to the paddock and unravelling all that good work.
Exactly.
So that argument of crashing into autumn, I think you're not you're getting paid $160 a day as a trainer to get that horse fit. Mm. If you can't adapt, then you're not fulfilling your requirements.
You don't have to run them every 2 weeks. No. That's the other thing. Like, you look through Europe and they'll have horses that run. His spring target is this, his summer target is that. The horses 1, 2, 3 starts, and then they're back in the summer, 1, 2, 3 starts. There's their 6, not every 2 weeks, bobbing up in races, chasing the prize money and using that 2-week cycle to get your horse fit.
The smarter trainers here now are not thinking that way at all.
No, you can see a dramatic shift in that mentality through a few stables. What does pushing everything back or moving things or whatever else do for the internationals? It give them a better chance of coming?
Well, it could do. And the other aspect is, what does Sydney do? We've heard nothing that they're contemplating to move any of their carnival. So is it too hard for a Golden Rose winner to press on to a Caulfield Guineas at the end of November? Or how do the Sydney horses become affected throughout a spring carnival as well?
I think the problem there is that the boss of New South Wales Racing is too busy making posters of himself to fill NRL publications.
You're not a PPL fan.
Not especially.
Hey, we need to take a break.
It was his job to start the competition, and they suddenly turn him into a hero figure and make posters of him. That was his job.
Belgate's very field shy of PVL. You can tell.
I've been trying to get him for a month, so if you're listening, Peter, please return some messages. We'd love to have a chat.
He's too busy running another sport.
He's too busy on the
48 jobs to
radio stations to cover NRL.
He's only got 5 minutes. That's all we know.
No, he hasn't got it, mate.
We need to take a break. Interesting discussion there. And, Matty, you put it up on the website for the listeners, the owners, the trainers, participants to have a look at what the Spring Carnival proposed schedule looks like. Important meeting today at 11 o'clock, ATA Owners Association. And I imagine we'll hear something from RVL probably before or by the end of the week, because this decision needs to be made. As we go to a break, a little bit of a snapshot of the biggest names in racing and what they had to say on it in the week that was.
We are exploring options, there's no doubt about that. When you consider that the AFL will be running finals in October, right up against the Caulfield races, we think there's some huge advantage if the Caulfield Cup was run later.
Well, I'd say it's wholly and solely a decision for Racing Victoria. For my part, I have no issue with it. I'm not trying to steer RV in any one direction or another.
I think it'd be fantastic if we had some top-class group racing, and most of our better racing, I think, should be pushed back, you know, at least a month further into the end of spring and the start of summer.
I think when we created our two-day carnival 8 or 9 years ago, we went with the Friday-Saturday doubleheader simply because there wasn't another Saturday through that key spring period. But now that Caulfield is looking to have those three feature Saturdays post-Flemington, Moonee Valley would love to explore the opportunity to have two consecutive Saturdays.
Key part of our carnival, of course, is crowds. media coverage, you know, and share a voice, and that leads to engagement with the carnival, it leads to revenues, it leads to all those things that are so strong about our carnival. And also, of course, the later you go, the theory being that there is more chance of having people on course. So it's sort of all the above, and all the above is why we are even considering it.
And the first one now will later be last, for the times they are a-changing.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
My Rhapsody's still whacking away, and Salios starts to chime in out wide. It's Contrail, Salios, Contrail, Contrail in front. Salios trying to get the better of it today, but Contrail's got the upper hand. Contrail, the favourite, races away. Contrail will take out the Derby, and five for five. Salios second, Valtrezende in for third. Satano impressive.
That was the Japanese Derby yesterday. Contrail, who looks an absolute machine, making it five from five. Damien Lane was on Salios, runner-up again to Contrail, and it looks a star as well. Sharky, you're our international man of mystery. How strong was this Japanese Derby?
I think the call was a little flattering for Salios, because Contrail was the only horse that hadn't been put under pressure up until about the 400. Even the 300, he was still on the bit and travelling. Jock's just waved his hands at him and he's exploded. He flogged them in that race. It was utterly arrogant. He was a $1.40 favourite, so you kind of expect him to. It was a good addition of the Japanese Derby. Look, it's a race that produces Group 1 winners going forward in years to come, every year. So there's always good depth. Those two colts stand out, or stood out this year as being a bit of a cut above the rest, and the race went that way. Japanese Guineas winner now, Contrail, and had Salios's measure there, up in distance, more dominant performance. Mm. We're just discussing here, Son of Deep Impact out of an unbridled song mare, so American influence there through that family.
Some people saying could be the best horse in the world.
I don't know about that. He's the dominant 3-year-old in Japan. I think that probably puts him ahead of plenty around the world. Not an overly massive horse. He's only 460 kegs, but he's
got. Yeah. He looked bigger on the telly. I thought he looked quite impressive, because Deep Impact's not an impressive, well, wasn't an impressive horse himself in physical stature.
Is there any scenario where he might bump into Almond Eye in the next month?
Ooh.
I'm not sure about that.
Because there can be a bit of crossover between the 3-year-olds and the open horses over there, can't there?
Mm.
Through the and the Ark is a tantalising scenario because of the Holy Grail thing with the Japanese and the Ark, because they've had a few cracks and they can't win it.
Well, you were reminding me of the Deep Impact story in the outbreak.
Well,
there, Matty.
When would it have been now? 10, 15 years ago, Deep Impact. He's regarded as the greatest Japanese horse ever, which probably means he's arguably the greatest horse ever. If you're the best Japanese, then, you know, where do you fit
in? You're there, yeah.
So he went over there as a $1.30 favourite or something. This enormous entourage of Japanese went over. They talk about the early crow. They booked out all the hotels in Paris. There was a massive media entourage. Every time there was a footage of a Deep Impact at track work, at wherever he was working, at Shanti or something.
Flags waving.
There was just Japanese everywhere. And, you know, the crowd that day was meant, you know, there was so many Japanese there to see this historic moment. And the whole thing just went belly up. It was slowly run. He got to the lead too early and wobbled about. The whole thing wasn't run the way he wants to be. And it's the greatest disappointment in the history of Japanese racing, is Deep Impact in the Ark. And then they've had a few goes since without any success. I think went second. So
they went the early crack.
So they will be desperate to find, especially a Son of Deep Impact, to right the historic wrong of what happened over there.
He's the right sort of horse, because he's got some versatility about him in that Japanese Guineas, he was well back and sort of towards the back of the field and came with this incredible late run. But in previous races, he won a 2-year-old Group 1 race. He was able to lob right there, stalking them. He did the same thing yesterday at 2,400 metres. He's got gate speed, and from a good draw, they can use him. And the speed at the end of his races, it doesn't matter where they settle. Back or front. The turn of foot's there regardless, which is a pretty unique quality.
We're going to talk about Dawn Passage. Interesting race over in Perth on Saturday in the Caulfield meeting, but there's a heap of SMSs. I just want to go through a few of these first. Strange not to hear the dogs barking when Sharky turns up late. Good day not to be in the backyard the weather was.
You didn't bring the dogs today?
They're in the car.
Oh, they're good.
Did you mute Shagger? Because Shagger's been very docile on your balcony lately.
Giving him some ice.
Yeah. We've just tried to calm him down. Are we just giving in to Volandis with all this talk of moving the carnival? One SMS. I think we're kidding ourselves, thinking that there's every possible chance full crowds in 2020. That's from Rod in Strathmore. What happens to the public holiday for the Melbourne Cup? Is the government going to change that into December? Well, no. We've got the cup stays where it is. We've got the public holiday. Twisting ourselves into knots over the common cold. It's just a sniffle. Have to clear it with Comrade Dan.
Tell that to the many hundreds of thousands of people that are no longer with us.
Yeah, a lot
that
of these
was from Rita from Southbank. Yeah.
Hi guys, if you move the Melbourne Cup to December, what happens to the public holidays? Another one on there. A lot of people like their holidays.
What about the AFL Grand Final? If that hypothetically, if the reports are right and it does move into a November slot, which could be Derby Day.
Oh, you
what
beauty!
What does that do?
The holiday on the Friday. Holiday Friday, because they've announced, haven't they, that the public holiday will be the Friday before the grand final, whenever the grand final is. So it might be the long, long, long weekend with the Monday that no one goes turns up anyway.
Get the fishing rods out, Shark. We can map ahead now.
There's benefits.
It'll be a feast.
Another one saying time to merge all three clubs. It worked for Sydney, the Metro clubs, that is. Once a year, punters aren't interested in the Caulfield Cup. I don't know about that.
David Moody, just on that merging of the three clubs, David Moody, former RV chairman, he was one of his top of agenda things was to get rid of the clubs. He wanted a single club model like Sydney.
This is an interesting one that says putting it all back into late November means that people might be already starting to tighten the purse strings with Christmas coming up. It would have an impact on turnover. What happens if we get a 45-degree day in December if we want to push everything back a month?
The last time that happened was in 1835, but anyway.
And then others saying maybe this is a time for us to look at the entire change of pattern. Plenty more SMSs, so we'll get to those as well. Outside of talking what may or may not happen, let's talk about what did happen on the weekend. Dawn Passage, it's a weak year because of the situation in the Stradbroke. It's going to take a good horse to beat Dawn Passage in the vein of form it's in with just 50 kilos come Saturday.
Is Exhilarates in the race?
Are they going to have to raise the weights?
Has to be, yep.
Because there's not enough jockeys to get skinny enough to ride the bottom weights? Are they going to have to make a decision to raise the weights for the Stradbroke?
I don't think they are.
Well, there's not enough jockeys who are light. There's so many lightweights. Without the visiting jockeys, there's not enough lightweights to ride the lightweights.
Mm.
That's the problem they face.
And then there's zones that come into effect as well in Queensland up there. So there could
be a stack of horses on around 50 kilos, but not a stack of jockeys who can ride it that way.
Don't tell me you can't get 15 jockeys in Queensland that can ride at 50 kilos.
Tell me, there aren't any jockeys.
They might just have to go to a lesser light jockey.
There aren't many jockeys required to ride at 50 kilos these days.
Well, I think James Innes Jr. has got the ride on the favourite because he was wasting, hoping that Dawn Passage would win in quarantine. So he's on board the favourite. And I think there's a few other that have snapped up the rides. It'll be something that we can play at. But I haven't seen that they're contemplating raising the weights.
They may have to because... Tell me how many jockeys can ride at 50 kilos.
Oh, I haven't got the list in front of me, Matt. It's a bit tricky.
But I'm just saying, I asked you that question because there's an easy answer, Mitho, and the answer is not many.
That's right. Well, that may be a contemplation. Or do they ask for dispensation from the Queensland government to have some sort of a quarantine measure for that day where the quarantine is relaxed? I don't know.
It's on Saturday. It's not going to happen.
Well, yeah.
It's not happening.
Or special...
Maybe a jockey will ride a kilo
well,
over
that's right, but the onus... And then it affects the punters. So if the owner says, oh, gee, I really want jockey A because jockey B is not as good, but jockey B is skinnier.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to cop your lot then.
But how much wriggle room is there? Can you say, oh, look, I'm happy just as long as I get Billy Bloggs, who's a superstar, I'm happy for him to ride 3 kilos over. What about the punter?
It's a good result, Dawn Passage, for James Innes Jr. in any case, that he got into the race. Otherwise, you're spending two lonely weeks in a Queensland hotel room looking over the racetrack effectively for naught.
No reason. Yeah.
So that's a great story and a good last-minute punt. He took the punt. The horse was good enough. So, geez, it'll only be, I think he said on Saturday, it'll only be his sixth Group 1 ride.
Mm.
He's the form horse going into it with a light weight. He may have two Group 1s in a very short space of time. I don't wonder if James Innes Jr. would have thought that.
I'm going to do something that Felgate hates, segue without notice.
Oh.
He never looks at a rundown.
The big meeting today. Stewards, Racing Queensland, Keurig, trainers,
exactly.
Integrity. Is that an okay segue?
Oh, I was actually about to just bring it up. So
he usually freaks out. He's been known to throw the odd item.
Just peeled out of the 200 and gone bang, Matty.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't see me coming. It was like northerly old comrade. So that's going to be interesting. What happens there?
Well, do we think anything will come of it, or is it just a catch-up? And this is from, originally it was Ben Dorey's article on Racing It, and then we spoke to last week Rob Heathcote, who continued to be extremely strong, and then we spoke to the Curate Commissioner.
And I had a chat to Tony Gollett.
Interesting
as well.
That...
What did Tony have to say?
Tony didn't want to... Well, to be honest, Tony was a little bit... annoyed that the laundry had been aired in public while the carnival was going on, but he still has views about integrity, including a feeling that during the coronavirus that the race day integrity completely went out the window and that people were taking advantage. He also seems to agree with Robbie Heathcote that it's a single issue of TCO2, that people are running around tubing horses up there. So I think, Michael, that something... something...
How many pots have you had?
Something... We'll cover this because it was born out of an issue that was brought to a head, and Curic and Racing Queensland have responded to that. So they are there with an intention, with a knowledge that maybe we are not doing all we can. So no, I think something will probably come out of this.
But it can only be good, can't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way the sport should be run. The clean participant saying, "Hey, I'm not really sure about this," and going to the authorities and saying, Can we just get a handle on exactly what's going on in our sport at the moment? Mm. And I think that's, you know, especially when people with as good and strong a reputation as Robbie Heathcote, I think that's a real positive for the sport up there and for Queensland. It has been sort of seen as a bit of a wild, wild west situation for a while, hasn't it, Mick?
It has. Although Tony Gollan did say this will also give us an opportunity to learn from Curic what they might be doing that we're not aware of.
And that's a big point, because in the conversations back and forth in the last week, it was all this defence of what we're doing and the regimes and the timing. Oh, we ramp things up here, ramp things up there. It seemed like it was disjointed. What their Curic actually do and what the trainers and participants perceive them to be doing.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity, as you say, to level that out and explain things.
Got a text message from Matty Kane at the MRC, and we know Matty, he spends a lot of time over in Japan.
Mm.
He's a guru over there. He said, "Contrail staying in Japan to attempt to complete the Triple Crown in October, so won't travel overseas for the ARC." Also on yesterday, was the running of the Meguro Kinen, which is a traditional lead-in for the Caulfield Cup for those Japanese horses, and he said the winner of that race, King of Koji, is being targeted for the Caulfield Cup after that win. So fingers crossed, that would be great to see that horse, maybe, in the end of November, and continue that Japanese connection racing.
Text him back, ask him when Armand Eye is running. I want to know if this Derby winner and Armand Eye might... Because it'll be the clash of the century if those two met, I would thought.
Well, Armand Eye, I think, is racing next week. I'm not sure what the race is, but I think I saw something on social media in regards to that.
The English Guineas is on this weekend, too.
Racing starts tonight.
Yeah, fillies and colts. It's quite amazing. Both mile races and no lead-up races, no form, no nothing. We're just straight up and into it. And to your point earlier, Mick, about programming and Australian trainers wanting to do it the traditional way, maybe they will have to rethink things, because it seems that the best horses are high up in the markets for the Quipco 1000 and 2000 guineas.
Pinatubo,
so keen to see him. He was absolutely the dominant two-year-old, and some of the performances he turned in last season were phenomenal. But we haven't seen them. We haven't been able to see a lot of these horses, and that's not... That's not out of the ordinary as far as the guineas are concerned in the UK, but yeah, I think there are a couple there that might sneak in under the radar a little bit.
What's interesting for me is we've got these megastars in Japan. Pinatubo is the most exciting horse in Europe at the moment.
Yep.
Surely Enable is soon, because there's a summer of racing for her to compete in. When are we going to see her in the next week or so?
Seen some track gallops.
Yeah, she looked great.
Yeah, at Newmarket. But
she's the most... beautiful looking horse I've ever seen in Enable. She's just got the it factor.
Yeah, she's got a beautiful star on her head.
Should make posters of her, not PVL.
Maybe the participants, the actual horse flesh, would be a better poster.
Our old mate Mickey Lynch will be on tomorrow to give us a rundown of the UK racing scene. And
he'll
also
be champion of the bit,
the French Guineas is being run tonight, he tells me, as well. So that's straight into it. Quick one before we wrap up. Belmont Sprint's probably the most interesting race over the weekend. A bit of an upset. Perfect Jewel beating the favourite, the Velvet King. I was interested to see Humidor's return. I thought he hit the line nicely, Humidor.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, good, positive return. I guess the difference between him and Blackheart Bartlett was made comparisons between the two going over there to sort of rejuvenate. And, yeah, Humidor, foot in the right direction.
I might give Lindsay a ring and try and get something up about what the thought might be with him.
And the $1.40 superstar, Windstorm, got beaten on the heavy track over there as well. So there was
Did Simon Miller have a winner? He was tipping his head off.
No, sadly, nothing for Simon Miller.
A little warning, he's a TM.
Tipping machine.
Mm-hmm. Out of Caulfield, gents, we haven't really spoken about Caulfield. There was an SMS saying kudos to Jason Kerr and his team. They thought that the track played perfectly on Saturday.
Well, I disagree, but it wasn't anyone's fault. It was the wind and that. The rail, it was for the most part.
You wanted
part,
to get off the fence.
Yeah, definitely.
There was some anecdotal feedback that there was some lanes of the track that were significantly softer than others.
All right, well, that's just an SMS. Yeah, Sharky disagrees. Anything catch your eye out of the meeting, Sharky or Mytho, moving forward?
Not especially.
Yeah, nothing that I think is going to throw forward into stakes races. Right You Are is progressing the right way, but he's doing plenty wrong, that horse. I thought the last winner, Heptagon, with the weight, was very, very strong. He fits that awkward sort of spot now. There's no real feature races for him. Maybe a winter championship series is the obvious, but he's probably too high up in the handicap now for a race like that.
The Street Boss 2-year-old of Darley's, I thought, was pretty good in a blanket finish and seems to have a little bit of X factor if you listen to those in the know at Godolphin.
Can I just raise a potential issue for down the track, speaking of that stable and others? The amount of building going on at Cranbourne at the moment, Cranbourne Training Centre, Price and Mick Kent Jr., bang there. Yep. Sutton Young have got a lot of boxes. Most of the Caulfield trainers, their anticipation is they're going to Cranbourne, one or two Henry Dwyer and so on, Ballarat, and very few to Pakenham. This is an ongoing beef of mine. Pakenham is sitting there. Cranbourne at the moment has 800 horses in work.
How many horses can they take?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you get most of these Caulfield trainers heading to Cranbourne and nowhere else, at what point, and this I'm interested to talk to Neil Bainbridge about this as well, at what point is it unsustainable? How many horses can you have in work at Cranbourne?
All I know on this topic is that Peter Moody can't believe the facilities he's got almost to himself. Him and Stokesy and a few smaller stables down there, boutique stables at Pakenham, Nargoon.
But there's no incentive for trainers to go down there. There's nothing built for them to walk into.
Yeah.
So I just think there's a massive imbalance looming here,
privately owned land, isn't it?
Well, at what point does it become almost an OH&S issue if there's 1,400 horses in work at Cranbourne in 12 months' time? How the hell does that work out?
Yep. Yeah, no, I don't disagree. They need to build facilities for... They need to build boxes. The facilities are fantastic. Tracks and pools.
At Pakenham,
The pool just opened up last week. I saw on Philip Stokes's Twitter feed, and it's all magnificent, but you've got to house your horses somewhere, Matt. So I think there needs to be some sort of collaborative approach between those landowners. I think Racing Victoria own a couple of plots, but they haven't yet
done
anything on those. And probably need to and start leasing them out, because I don't know that too many trainers, unless the big operations, have got the cash to go and buy a block of land and build a 60-box facility.
No. Well, we're very mindful of issues and incidents at track work, and we've had a few terrible ones over the years. We wouldn't want to put a certain track in a position where it's a traffic jam.
Gents, we're out of time. Mytho, great to see you here in the Emerald. Well done, too, on the sale once again last week.
Thank you. Magic
Millions as well. Can you leave us? Is there any sneakies? Oh. Anything we can make some money out of?
Gee, I was tipping Crone strong last week each way. Paid $6 the place in the last pot. Well, no, I'm going to repeat the effort.
Yeah.
I'm going to tip Star Rosa in the JJ Atkins. I know it's a big, big price, 50-1.
Is it?
But she worked with Isotope during the week, over the weekend on Saturday. And I'll show you a little video when we go to the ad break.
Ooh,
and you pick whether one should be $4.
I'm always
$4
cautious when you say I'll show you a little video in the ad break.
$51, $13.50 the place. He's done it again.
Owner tips.
Coming from the greatest pusher of horses, you've got something to do with.
No, I'm quite the opposite. I'm very harsh on mine.
So nothing coming from Spicer and your team this week?
Our Wind Spirit tomorrow at Warrnambool, race 9.
As long as it doesn't beat Manny Galligatos' hot tip.
We might, we might have to get Manny on
tomorrow. Hey, great discussion today. Fascinating to see how it will all play out. Big meeting today. Matty, you'll be following it, and you're going to hang around, have a chat with Gareth as well a little later. Mitho, good to see you. Sharky,
cheers, Mick.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Mick.
We are here courtesy of Oz Equipment Rentals, Australian-owned independent rental company. They don't just rent access and construction gear. They form relationships and work with our customers like their very own business partners, and that is why we are live at the Emerald on day one of its reopening. We'll take a break. Warren Huntley's just finishing off his pot. He's going to wander over and give us all the winners today. That's up next.